Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Good evening. My name is Al Whitney. Welcome to In Defense of Humanity on this 20th day of October 2018. This program is about helping people reawaken to the wonderful qualities of our own species while accepting and understanding that the current corporate commercial legal structure, both government and business is built upon, is actively seeking to take control of most organic life forms on our planet. Restoring our unalienable rights and preserving our planet will require that we, the people, understand what has happened and learn how to empower ourselves as living men and women. Much of the information discussed on this show can be found either on my primary website, anticorruptionsociety.com, or my secondary site, parentsagainstmandatoryvaccines.net. There is also an IDH program links page on anticorruptionsociety.com where you can locate links to many of the topics we discuss on the show. If you need to remind yourself, why humanity is worth defending, please read and enjoy the In Defense of Humanity page listed at the top of my website. I'd like to make new listeners aware that there is a free People's Empowerment Guide to our corporate commercial legal system on my website called Lawfully Yours. It is a collaboration of many men and women in the legal accountability movement. You can locate it by clicking on the Lawfully Yours tab. This guide contains valuable tools for challenging the non-existent authority of our corporate government, as does the notice of condition precedent information also on my website. If you haven't yet processed your own notice, please check it out. Well, tonight I'm happy to announce that we have a guest returning. Dr. Paul Byrne has agreed to come back, and I've come up with a bunch of questions for Dr. Paul. Let me start, Dr. Paul, by giving people a little introduction as to who you are. Dr. Paul Byrne is a neonatologist and a clinical professor of pediatrics. He is past president of the Catholic Medical Association. He is the producer of the film Continuum of Life and the author of Life, Life Support, and Death Beyond Brain Death. And Brain Death is Not Death. Dr. Byrne has presented testimony on life-death issues to 9 state legislatures beginning in 1967. He opposed Dr. Jack Kevorkian on Crossfire and has appeared on Good Morning America, the British Broadcasting Corporation documentary, Are the Donors Really Dead? and public television in Japan. He is the author of many articles in medical and law journals, and as well as the lay press. Are you there, Dr. Byrne?
I am, Al, and thank you very much for inviting me back on the program. The things that you stand for are some of the same things that I have been taking a stand for a long time, and perhaps from a different angle in the sense that I am a physician, and so I know a fair amount about medicine and how medicine has changed so dramatically and drastically since I graduated from medical school. That there was major changes in medicine that happened in the late 60s, specifically 1968 is when I can identify that major changes occurred. The most significant thing is that prior to that time, the goal and objective of every patient that presented to us was to make a diagnosis and then to find a treatment. And what happened then in 1968, they invented brain death. And what brain death means is to be alive. It means to have a beating heart and circulation and respiration and many other functions of the body actively going on. But what happens is when a patient is found to be unconscious and they can't show that they can take a breath on their own, they then call that brain death so that they can get organs from those living persons. And medicine changed so much, and of course, I was a doctor during that time. I was doing my own thing in terms of taking care of sick newborn babies and finding more and better ways to treat the babies. And I have to admit that I wasn't paying a lot of attention, except that in medicine, we doctors tend to trust each other. And so I trusted that what they were doing was acceptable. And then what happened in 1975 is I had a baby that I was taking care of who, after several weeks on the ventilator, would lay there and not move and not make any attempt to breathe. And a brainwave test was done, and his brainwaves were flat. And it was interpreted as consistent with cerebral death. That was my first experience with this, and I saw death written on Joseph's chart, and I looked at Joseph and said, no, Joseph's not dead. What's this all about? So the neurologist said, well, just repeat it, which we did, and it was still flat. So then it was suggested that in some places they stopped treating them and turned the ventilator off, and I said, well, I don't do that. I treat patients. Some are very sick, so some do die, but many of them live, so I continued to treat Joseph, and eventually he was able to breathe on his own and was able to get off the ventilator, and he eventually went to school and got good grades and ran track, played baseball. He's married and has three children. So 1975, that was my first experience with this thing called brain death. So I, after that, I began to study, and I studied for about 2 years before I published the first article with my concerns about brain death, and because it did not make any sense, and I. I am a physician, and a certain amount of what we do as a physician is based on science. And so I looked at the science that was there behind this thing of brain death, and there literally was no science behind it. It was just made up. The scientific approach to medicine is that some things begin in a laboratory. Some things begin with studies on animals. Some things begin with small numbers of patients, that kind of thing, before it spreads out to affect more people. Well, there were no studies on animals. They really did not do any studies on human beings either. They just embarked, and the way they embarked is that they did a heart transplant in South Africa, and 3 days later, they did the second heart transplant in Brooklyn, New York. And in Brooklyn, New York, they cut the beating heart out of a three-day-old baby who had a problem with his brain, and transplanted that heart into an 18-day-old baby who had a problem with the heart, but not the brain. And at the end of their experimental procedures, both babies were dead, and it was illegal. It was immoral. They knew it was illegal. They knew it was immoral. And what they did then to solve or resolve the problem was they set up a committee at Harvard. It became known as the Harvard Committee. And the Harvard Committee published the first set of brain death criteria. It's known as the Harvard criteria. And with that, they could declare somebody brain dead while they have a beating heart and circulation. And the reason they did that is so they could get organs for transplant and also so they could stop treating them. So there's a lot of things, and we can come back and talk to that, but I want to tell you about patients that I've been helping in the last few days, and one little girl in Texas who had a problem with a tumor in her chest and stopped breathing and was resuscitated. But when she got in the system, the main focus was on her brain. That is to say that she was brain dead. And while there was some attention paid to the tumor in their chest, not near as much as it would have been in the past, because in the past, the focus would have been on the part, the serious part that gets the patient to the doctor and then continue to treat. But in the modern times, the focus is on that the brain is not functioning, and then if they can, they want to get organs, especially from a young patient like that this girl is or was, and then if they can't get organs, like her mother said no to the organs, so then what they embark on is stopping treatment. And they did get into the legal system and the like, but to make that story as brief as possible, she did pass last night. But much effort at trying to help her was done by her mother, by people like me, but the system is set up to get organs. And if they can't get organs, then to make them not live. There's another little baby that is pretty similar in the sense, seriously ill, gets involved with the declaration of brain death, and then when she starts to breathe on her own, they can't call it that anymore, but they still don't want to do the things to help her to live. She continues to live. But her poor parents are going through an awful time, and really the system is set up so that since they again, the mother, father will not give permission to take organs, therefore they really don't want to treat her, and the things that could be done to save her life have not been done, and I suspect they won't be done, and the poor parents and relatives go get into the system when their relative is unconscious and not able to breathe. They get into the system thinking they're going to get treatment, when in fact what they do is find themselves in a system where their goal and objective is to get organs. If they can't get organs, then stop treating. And that is, this thing has changed all of the practice of medicine at all ages. It's changed the laws. It's made it so, while much attention is paid to what happens so far as abortion is concerned, but these other things that have to do with life and death are not being exposed to the general public, except on a great program like yours. And I'm so grateful to be able to come on your program and talk about these things. I'll slow down and stop, but I wanted to get that introduction about how it's changed in 68 and how it affects multiple patients, and it just happens to be two of them that I get involved with. There are many others that are happening at the same time.
I really appreciate that. Thank you so much. That was a great introduction into this topic. And I have a whole list of questions for you. I've been fortunate enough to have conversations off air with Dr. Byrne, and I can't seem to run out of questions for him. I mean, he has a mountain of information on these topics. As listeners probably know, I've said in the past, I was a respiratory therapist, and I was very involved in ventilators and resuscitation and trying to save patients to keep them alive long enough to recover. So this whole thing has really upset me a great deal. I did see changes in medicine. It became more for profit. You and I think, have talked about that. It does seem to be when the churches ran the hospitals, there was more concern for the patients. Now, I don't believe the churches are in control of these hospitals. They may still bear the name of St. Mary's or something, but I do not believe the churches are in control of hospital policies anymore. Is that accurate, Dr. Byrne?
That's very accurate, because the way that hospitals are run depends on how they are paid, and in the past, people were responsible for their health care and for payment of their own health care, and then gradually insurance came about, and then gradually more things. But if you again get up to the present time, everybody over 65 has essentially the same insurance. It's called Medicare. And then there are many other people that are get their medical care through Medicaid. The Medicare is a federal operated way of getting payment for health needs. And the Medicaid is a way that each state pays for different people. But they are all controlled under what's called CMS. And CMS are the medical services that are operated by the government, the federal government and the state governments. And the Secretary of Health, the way it's set up, the Secretary of Health has the final say-so for everything that goes for health care for CMS. And yes, there are other people who work for the Secretary of Health that get involved with that also. But the rules and regulations for what gets treated and how it gets treated, how it gets paid for, is via the signing off, the direction of the Secretary of Health, which completely controls CMS. That's Medicare and Medicaid. Then what happens is the private insurance companies all follow the same rules. And so we have a system of medicine in the United States that is really a socialized system. It's just that the funds are kept in federal government, state government, and private insurance companies.
Hold on, Dr. Byrne. We're going to go to break. We'll be back shortly. Thank you.
Many people tell us about their experience with Extendivite. Just listen to what Glenn has to say.
Prior to taking it, I had diabetic neuropathy. The Extendivite reduced that significantly. Acid reflux was reduced. I had athlete's foot, very severe. Trimmed that down to about 75%. Dandruff, almost completely gone. I had occipital neuralgia at the base of my skull. I was having migraines, reduced by about 90%. Heart palpitations, my heart would kind of stall out. I would skip a beat. Very uncomfortable. And when walking from downstairs going to sleep, by the time I got to the bedroom, which is just one flight of stairs, my heart was pounding, coming out of my chest. My vision was blurry. This completely solved that problem. Great product. Thanks.
Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing, knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Appreciate that information, Dr. Byrne. I don't know if the listeners are aware of how the government has really encroached on the practice of medicine, but it has been going on. Some people say it really got into high gear when Medicare was passed, but I have some questions, very specific questions, that I think the listeners would appreciate hearing from you, because I know you understand this. And as outsiders, we're not generally in a hospital. Some of us have some experience with our relatives, but it's all a puzzlement to us when we're involved in it, because they seem to have a whole different agenda than we have. How do they select which patients they want as donors if it's not on the card? If someone hasn't already volunteered to be a donor, the way you're talking, that doesn't mean that they're not going to be targeted when they appear in the hospital emergency department. So there must be something they're looking for. Is that correct?
Well, essentially, everyone is targeted, but what they look at to screen is if someone has signed up to be an organ donor, that makes their life much easier to get the organs. Then, of course, it gets a sophisticated, complicated way to analyze the blood of the donor and the blood of the tissue of the recipient to make sure that they match. That gets pretty sophisticated. But what happens is that if someone has not signed up to be an organ donor, and they are, especially if they are 40 years or less, then they are ideal candidates to get their organs. And so they the laws are all set up to get organs. The way they get the laws is through the Anatomical Gift Act, and it's abbreviated UAGA, Uniform Anatomical Gift Act, and it's essentially the same in all the states, but 47 states have already passed what's called the Revised Uniform Anatomical Gift Act, and it was revised in 2006. It took a few years until every state got it, and Ohio has it. So all the states around us, and it basically presumes that everyone intends to be an organ donor, and it presumes that everyone has consented to have every test done on them to determine if their organs are good, and good for whom? Good for someone else, and then it's presumed that everyone has consented to have everything done to them to make them, to keep them suitable as an organ donor and to keep them suitable as an organ donor. And this is all built into the law. The laws are built in that young people can be an organ donor. In some states, as young as 15 and a half, they can sign saying they want to be an organ donor. In Ohio, in 16, they can sign to be an organ donor. And until they reach the age of 18, their parents have a certain objection that they can object. But once they have signed at 16, once they get to be 18, the parents can't do anything to object, and neither can anyone else. And so the first thing they look for is indication that they want to be an organ donor. Now, the law is such that if someone would hear some of the things that I might say or learn some other things about the fact that every organ donor is a living person. There are no organs you can get from a cadaver. Many people think that you get organs after you're dead, when in fact there are no organs you can get after there's no circulation. There has to be circulation, which is part of life. And so if someone learns something and they've already signed up to be an organ donor, they can go back to the License Bureau and say they don't want to be an organ donor, and then the law is written that is called a revocation in the law in Ohio and in 47 states. It's called a revocation, but a revocation is not a refusal, and they can still embark on finding ways to get organs. This law was passed readily in the state of Ohio. I did go there to testify in opposition of the law, and when it was in the House or the Senate. And then a few weeks later, when they had hearings again, I went back, and they said to me, "Oh, we usually don't let anyone testify more than once." That did not make any sense to me. But then they said, "Because you're a doctor, we'll listen to you again." And again, that doesn't make any sense to me. Go ahead.
We're going to break again. This one's a bit longer. We shall be back in about 4 minutes.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read a few from Amazon.com. Dr. Sam Serino reviewed the Extendivite product. Good ingredients, feeling much better since taking product. It seems that the tablets work well. Once again, thank you for your product. My acid reflux is really improved thanks to the Extendivite. Together with my thumb joints, the pain is gone and I'm able to grip things much better. My friend has peripheral arterial disorder and their lower legs were hurting at a red color, but thankfully there has been a significant improvement. Kind regards, Janice. My husband feels a big difference using Extendivite. Thank you. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
This is too good to be true, except this time it is real. 100%. No joke. How about a $25,000 membership to Front Sight Firearms Training Facility as a thank you bonus for a one-time donation to RBN of only $500? It is a Commander Lifetime membership with no yearly fees or dues. The training is free for the rest of your life with over 50 different classes. Then leave it to your designated beneficiary. You provide the approved firearm, holster, ammo, eye, and ear protection. Many features and bonuses are included, more than you would ever expect or believe. This is the ultimate graduation present, wedding gift, etc., etc. See the details. Go to RBN's webpage and frontsight.com to make it happen. You will hear this offer only on this radio network. Help keep RBN alive. Tell 5.
Ladies and gentlemen, J.R. Moore here. As most of you know, my regular listeners, I offer energy cleaners for sale at my website. If you don't have a clue what I'm talking about, go to my website, thelibertyman.com, educate yourself about these marvelous healing devices. We focus on pain mitigation and getting a great night's sleep. Arthritis pain, joint pain, back pain, doesn't matter. Keep in mind, I offer for me to you personally a 30-day money-back guarantee. That's what I do. Energy cleaners, $285, shipping included, to American zip codes. You can educate yourself all about the energy cleaner right there at my website, the patent application, the wonderful testimonials. Be sure and check out the factory-made fitted mattress pads to go with the energy cleaner. Now, I offer from me to you personally a 30-day money-back guarantee. That's what I do. I have a toll-free order line, or you can order it right at my website at thelibertyman.com. The toll-free order line is 800-592-9543. I say again, 800-592-9543. Thank you.
We're back with Dr. Byrne. And so you went back to the legislature in Columbus, the state house, to testify a second time. And initially, they didn't want to let you do it, right?
Correct. But they did. And but as it all turned out, every representative in the state of Ohio voted for that bill. Everyone. There's no exception. And so they're all responsible for this situation that we have. There was one senator who voted against it. Perhaps that senator listened to some of the things I was saying. But in any event, I don't know that. And while it's important, these things about the laws, what's most important is that people know that the laws are set up to get your organs. Now, we got into this because you were asking some questions about once you get into the hospital system, then what happens is that it's a new environment for the people because what the way the people live is they live their life with their family, their friends, their relatives. relatives, and they something happens that they get into the medical system, and when they are registering, they get asked questions like, "Do you have a living will?" People are not equipped to answer that. At least as young people, for the most part, are not equipped, and most people know nothing about living wills. Incidentally, there isn't anything living about living wills. And living wills are in some ways analogous to life insurance. Life insurance has nothing to do with life. It only has to do with death. But you could sell it if you call it death insurance. Living wills have nothing to do with living. What they have to do with is getting less treatment for the patient and then setting it up so that the doctors in the hospitals are protected against liability if your relative dies. And there isn't anything you can do about it because they've already agreed under certain circumstances they would prefer to be dead. And then that gets twisted around. So especially once somebody is a little bit older and they die, I haven't found very many situations that lawsuit is successful because and it makes it less likely to be successful if they have a living will. So yes. You have to answer that question. Then what happens is that you find out that the goal and objective is to get you treated as quickly as possible and out of the hospital. And then, in my own personal experience, the doctor came in the morning and said, "Well, your wife has to get discharged this afternoon." And I said, "Whoa, wait a minute here. She's not in any condition to get out of the hospital." But how long you stay in the hospital is determined by how much will be paid. The Secretary of Health determines how many days you get eligible to be in the hospital, and then you have to get discharged. And then it doesn't make any difference what your condition is at that time, because it's then set up that you get into what they call rehab, which is nothing like hospital treatment and care in a hospital, and that system is there. And what is the difference? What happened? And I really focus on 1968. Medicare started in 1964, so that they're in some ways they're related. But yes. prior to 1964. Medical treatment and care was determined by the patient and the doctor. And right. Then what happened, as Medicare and Medicaid gets more involved, it's determined by how the payment is done. So it revolves much more around medicine than it does by the sickness that you have or how your doctor wants to treat you. The doctors are all bound by the same situation. If you go to the doctor, he pays more attention to the laptop computer that's in front of him than he does you. And every one of us has experienced that. And the doctors know it too, but they can't do anything about it or else they won't make a living. Because they know that they have to fill in so many X's, so many spots, and that's the only way you get paid. And then they have to learn which boxes to check so they get paid more. And if right. they don't, they get paid less. This is the yes. system that we have. It's a system that revolves more around money than it does around the patient. And then if you carry this to the organ transplant industry, the organ transplant industry is completely dependent on getting healthy organs. And where do you get healthy organs? You get them from living persons. You cannot get any organs for transplant from a cadaver. You get some tissues, like bones and ligaments. after there's no circulation. And then how big is the industry? $34 billion was billed in 2017 for organ transplantation. And I look at these numbers, $34 billion, that seems like a big number to me. And yet it's that many dollars that are involved in organ transplantation, at least the billing for organ transplantation. How many more dollars are involved isn't included in there, but it's the bills that go from the hospital and the like for the organ transplant industry, or enterprise, as some people call it. Incidentally, so we get it out there before we go too far, there are two websites that we have. One is www.lifeguardianfoundation.org, and the other one is www.truthaboutorgandonation.org. And while the audience can hear what you and I are talking about, they can go to these websites and read about it and learn more, and they need to learn more, because if they're going to protect themselves, they have to have a document of refusal. And at Life Guardian Foundation, we do send out cards that people can sign and witness, and it helps to protect them. And so we encourage people to read and to learn about it and to do things to protect yourself. And incidentally, when we get into the protection of self, you have to know that the law is set up that when somebody becomes 18, I should back up a little bit, prior to 18, they look to the mother and father as being responsible for the health care and giving consent for different things that happen that are going to be, children are going to be treated. When they get to be 18, no longer do they look to the parents. So everybody who becomes 18 has to have a power of attorney for health care if they want their parents to have anything to say about them. And it seems to me that's necessary to do until somebody gets married or that kind of thing. But they need a power of attorney for health care. Everybody who's 18, how do I learn this? I learn it because the parents get in touch with me. The mother's in Texas. Her son goes to school in California, and he's 19 years old in an accident. And before the mother can do anything, it's already into the legal system, and somebody else has been appointed by the court to have the power to make decisions. So in order to continue to have your parents to have something to say about you, you have to have a power of attorney for health care. We are not attorneys, but we do give out model information so people can go to their attorney and get a power of attorney for health care.
Okay, hold on, Dr. Bird.
Yes.
Hold on.
Yes.
I wanted to add here, I'm certainly not disagreeing with you, but I've been talking to people locally. There are people who are divorced, and they may be 50, 40, 60 years old. And I inform them that if you're not married and you don't have a power of attorney, even at 60, if you are unconscious, somebody will appoint a guardian for you who will be making these decisions. So you better protect yourself if you are single, and talk to someone you care about and trust, and assign them power of attorney so that they can speak on your behalf. Otherwise, it will be a court-appointed guardian, and I'm sure the court-appointed guardians listen to whatever the doctor wants.
Al, very good point, and thank you for your audience to be grateful that you brought that out. And it's an example of how our experiences affect us. So I expressed how some of the experience that I've had with patients, you've expressed it in terms of what you've learned from your own self And so we're able to share that with the listening audience. But while sharing it, they must do something. And
yes.
The power to make decisions, they must execute a document. It's called a power of attorney for healthcare. They must do that. But the other thing they must do is that they must learn about these things about life and about how the laws are set up to call you dead while you have a beating heart circulation. And that's contrary to all common sense. You would never do it to your pet dog. Your pet cat would never have somebody cut on them to do something to them while they're still alive. That kind of thing that would happen, and yet it happens to human beings all the time. And it's legal. And so it's important that the listening audience learn about these things.
Okay, can I jump in again? I mean, because the living will thing.
Yes.
A lot of people believed in the concept, and for a long time I did as well. The living will. Under certain circumstances, people feel that if they've been sick a very, very long time, and if they've been really miserable, and everybody knows they're miserable, and they're in the decline, I could see why people might have considered, I did myself, having a living will. However, when I went and looked at the information in the driver's manual of the Bureau of Motor Vehicles in Ohio, I noticed that when it came to the living will, they don't care about the details. I mean, I've seen living wills where people describe in detail what they do and do not want, and there's a whole bunch of information there. But at that moment when you're at the BMV, and they ask if you have a living will, they don't care about the details. The details mean nothing to them, and I doubt they're even going to ask to see what is in the document. They just put in their computer that you have determined that you don't want your life extended if you should have some dread disease, period. The details don't get entered into the computer. The details are never looked at, in my opinion, by the hospital. All they have is either a yes or no. Am I correct?
You're correct. And then you use terms, don't want their life extended because of a dread illness. And you see what happens is that those are thoughts that come from imagination in terms of what's a dread illness. Let me tell you, some of the things that I have seen, the listening audience would have a hard time even imagining what they're like. That kind of thing. And in order to practice medicine, we have an obligation to a doctor has an obligation to get all of the information that he can get before he makes a decision. All of the information about the patient, and then to get all of the information about the current treatments that are available before he recommends something for a patient. A so-called living will that's going to write out something that's going to take effect 5 years from now is contrary to both of these aspects of the good practice of medicine. You cannot possibly know what things are going to be like 5 years from now about yourself or about the treatments. And so all living wills violate these two basic principles. One of the important things is to get something in writing, but then the person who will have responsibility to speak for you when you can't speak for yourself must know where you come from and know that they are a substitute for you, and then what the power of attorney should do is protect and preserve your life. That's what they should do. And don't worry, you're not going to get too much treatment. It won't happen. The system is set up that there's too many things set up not to waste money on you if you're very sick, as these patients that I just described in a little bit. I didn't give a lot of details because to protect those patients, that kind of thing. But in any event, medicine is such that you have to do things to take care of yourself now. In the past, I think you could trust the system much more than you can now. And I'm a physician. I'm not against medicine. I'm all for getting the very best diagnosis and treatment. And much of medicine is very exciting. You know, we have images with CAT scans and MRIs and that kind of thing. And it's very exciting, and there's good treatments that are there. But if you're very sick, the system is set up to not waste money on you.
Okay, hang in there. We'll be back shortly.
Did you know that neither the American Medical Association nor the American Bar Association were established to benefit the American people? Have you recognized that in our country, health care has little to do with health, and that our court system has nothing to do with justice? The priests of both medicine and law have been incentivized to implement a dark agenda on behalf of the Bilderbergers and their ilk. To protect ourselves and our progeny, we need to take a much closer look at how these two giant industries really work. Join me, Al Whitney, on In Defense of Humanity, Saturdays at 7 p.m. Central, as we expose the matrix and learn how not to consent to our own destruction.
Extendivite is more than just a heart tonic. Most basic diseases are caused by yeast in the gut and metals in the liver, and we all have a bit of both. The garlic in Extendivite has a yeast-killing effect in the gut while also helping the sulfur enzyme in the liver get rid of the metals. Extendivite just may improve your overall health. Products like Extendivite are the only way we are going to get our society healthy. And if you're waiting for the government and pharmaceutical care to solve your health problems, you're going to have a long, disappointing wait, I think. Extendivite is a complete formula for extended life in the new millennium. 80 can be the new 60. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a two-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
I have a question. I actually have two questions for you based on some of the information you shared with me in our conversations. And I'm telling you, I was taking notes. You are a mountain of information. However, I was hoping to kind of wrap up and open it up for questions from the listeners, because this is an opportunity they're not going to get very frequently. So let me ask mine, and then at 9 o'clock after the break, we'll encourage people to call in and they can ask you their questions. Is that okay with you?
Oh, yes.
Okay, here's my question. And you and I had a little conversation, but I didn't have a chance to finish out my thought, or we didn't have a chance. There was so much to talk about. You said that who gets put on the waiting list? I happen to know people who have been put on the waiting list for an organ transplant, and, you know, their health isn't good. I mean, I can't believe that they would even survive it. I'm just being honest, you know. So what is the deal with getting on that list? How does that work to be a recipient on that list?
My understanding is that whatever transplant center has a patient listed, they get a certain amount of funds on a regular basis for how many patients are listed there. So it helps them to get funds, but the more they have listed, the more it expresses to the people that there's a need for organs, and it serves as an incentive to get organs. Along those lines, Al, what they do is they talk about the gift of life. Well, if they don't tell you that the donor, it's always a vital organ that's taken, and so the donor is always either killed or made weaker. If it's an organ that they could take a part of, or if there's more than one organ, and they can take one of two kidneys, it certainly doesn't make them stronger. Doesn't make the donor stronger, and so it has it all revolves around the gift that's given to the recipient. There's no gift of life that's given to that goes with the donor, and to give something like I could give your car, Al, to one of my relatives, and because you know, you really don't have a need for it. I don't know, but I suspect your husband has a car, and you can go in his car, and I can give your car to one of my relatives. Doesn't that sound like an excellent idea? And you would say, well, you can't give my car away. Well, of course not. And we really don't belong to ourselves. We get the gift of life, and then we have our life, and we take care of ourselves, and we can do things for ourselves and for people around us that we love, and friends, relatives, neighbors. We can do things, but the life is a gift.
Thank you. The music is playing. We'll be back shortly. Thank you, Dr. Billy.
Okay.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party property, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll-free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
This is